right here. See my old friend Martin. Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seemed good they die young. I just look around and he's gone. Didn't you love the things that they stood for? Didn't they try to find some good for you and me? Then we'll be free. Someday, soon, he's gonna be one day.
Ladies and gentlemen,
can you tell me where he's gone?
I'm only going to talk to you just for a minute or so this evening, because I have some very sad news for all of you,
Abraham and Martin and John.
And I think sad news for all of our fellow citizens and people who love peace all over the world, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis.
This is KPFT, Houston.
One man come in the name of love. One man come and go. One man come here to justify. One man.
Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult time for the United States, perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred.
Then I got into Memphis.
And a desire for revenge.
And some began to talk about the threats that were out.
We can move in that direction as a country.
What would happen to me from some of our sick white brothers?
Black people amongst blacks, or white amongst whites.
Well, I don't know what will happen now.
Filled with hatred. Forward one another.
We've got some difficult days ahead.
We've had difficult times in the past, and we will have difficult times in the future.
But it really doesn't matter with me now.
We can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did.
Because I've been to the mountaintop.
To understand.
Like anybody, I would like to live.
And to comprehend.
A long life, longevity has its place.
And replace that violence.
But I'm not concerned about that now.
With an effort to understand.
I just want to do God's will.
Compassion.
And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain.
And love.
And I've looked over. I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
Early morning, April 4th, shut rings out in the Memphis sky. Free at last, they took your life, they could not.
Thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Axis Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and if you're just catching us, we're listening to Juan Cole and Peter B. Collins in Studio A, and they're talking about the alleged plot to kill the Saudi ambassador. And now, on to Peter B. Collins.
Well, and the only real smoking gun or circumstantial evidence they have are these two $50,000 wire transfers. And whether it was to buy heroin that was in an inventory controlled by the Revolutionary Guard, or whether it was for this far-fetched plot to kill the Saudi ambassador, you don't wire money in those kinds of chunks. Anybody, whether you're a spy or a drug dealer, you know how to launder money, and you don't wire it into an FBI account from a bank in Tehran.
Well, to be fair, it apparently was not wired into the account from Tehran. It was from a third-party bank. But that makes it even more suspicious that, how do we even know that this money originated in Iran, or from what accounts in Iran did it initiate? Because all the FBI got was a wire, apparently, from a European country.
Okay.
But of course, everybody in the, the FBI, our banking system no longer is private, it's public. So if you move money in and out of your bank, the government knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're supposed to only monitor, I think, transfers of $10,000 or more. So a lot of people move $9,999 to try to get around that. But, they're not stupid. So they know that people might try to get around them. So they look at transfers less than $10,002, which is how Elliot Spitzer got caught.
Yeah.
Nobody in their right mind who knew anything about the way the U.S. DEA works would ever wire $50,000 into an American account. That's just asking to be caught.
Indeed.
So, no, the whole thing is it's a Keystone Cops operation. Whatever was going on there is certainly not this sophisticated assassination plot by the nefarious Iranian Revolutionary Guards. It's just not plausible. And Bob Baer, who's a 30-year veteran of the CIA and worked on this kind of thing, has come out and said it's not plausible. In fact, I'm in close contact with the American Iran experts, both in academia and in the security field, and none of them believes this. Even hawks on Iran, have stood against the story as just implausible.
Well,
the Obama administration's using it for various purposes.
Well, what that affirms, Professor, is that my bullshit detector is accurate.
Yes, you've all along had a very good one, Peter.
It's working. Now, give me your thoughts about recent developments between Israel and Palestine, because the trade of some 1,400 Palestinian prisoners for Gilad Shalit was affected and completed. And now we've seen just over the past weekend here, the last weekend of October, that not Hamas, but other fringe Palestinian groups have been trading fire with Israelis. And in the American media, I found it very frustrating because stories in both the New York Times and in local papers from the Associated Press talk about the Israeli response. And they do indicate that Hamas is not focused on here, but they don't really give us the full story of how this started. We know that Israeli drone strikes have hit back on Gaza, and we know that one Israeli was killed from one of the rockets fired by the Palestinians. What else can you add to this, Professor Cole?
Well, you know, there's a kind of fog of war. All those things are very murky. What does seem clear is that Gaza, the Gaza Strip, which is one of two territories where Palestinians predominate, which are supposed, according to the Oslo Accords, to form the core of a Palestinian state. Gaza is not under the control of anybody. The Israelis say that it's controlled by Hamas, but it's not really. You know, 40% of Gazans live in refugee camps. They're not organized people. And so there are these small extremist groups like Islamic Jihad that send rockets over onto Israel, and who I've seen them on Al Jazeera boasting that they're able to hit further and further into Israel proper. So, you know, it's always a chicken, the egg with the Israelis and the Palestinians. The Israelis do something to these people that they fired at the Israelis, or did they try to provoke the Israelis? Or, you know, how would you ever know unless you were there on the ground? I think the big story about Israel and Palestine, though, is the one that broke today, which is UNESCO has recognized the Palestine Authority, Palestine essentially, as a member state, the cultural organization of the UN has voted 107 in favor of accepting this. It's more than a 2/3 majority of UNESCO members. About 50 some abstained, and only a handful voted against, the U.S. and a few other rejectionist states who don't want Palestinian statehood anytime soon. So this was an enormous victory for the Palestine Authority and for the policy of diplomacy, of world diplomacy, that the current Palestine Authority has adopted. I think they won't get a majority in the Security Council when that comes up for a vote in about a month. But it's clear that this vote at UNESCO does signal a real sea change. Britain abstained. France was in favor. Russia and China were in favor. India was in favor. Brazil was in favor. So the rising powers in the world have all had a change of heart and have begun to see the Palestinians as needing a state. And, you know, if you don't have a state, if you're stateless, if you're not a citizen of anything, then you don't really have any rights. There's no government that will back up your property rights. There's no government that will back up your human rights. So you've got millions of Palestinians living in statelessness who have no rights. And as long as the Israelis and the United States intervene to prevent a Palestinian state from being formed, what they're essentially doing is sentencing those millions of people to living in a condition of uncertainty with regard to what they own, what they can do, what rights they have, and it's intolerable.
Mm-hmm.
So this vote at UNESCO, I think, is quite historic.
Now, with the prisoner swaps, we're seeing that both sides are now offering bounties. There are some conservative Israelis offering $100,000 for the capture and kill of a released prisoner who commits another crime. And I believe it's Iranians who have, or maybe it's a Saudi.
It was a Saudi. Well, no, what happened was, sorry to interrupt you. But
yeah, go ahead.
There was a Palestinian, I believe, cleric who offered $100,000 to anyone who would capture another Israeli soldier, like
right.
a Gilad Shalit. And then as a counter, there were some Israelis who offered $1 million to prevent it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Saudi prince came in with the $900,000 to make the original offer good. There's a bidding war on kidnapping Israeli soldiers or kidnapping Palestinian fighters, I guess.
Well, this is a macabre new version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah. It's typical of the murkiness and the just intractability of this problem. They're not going to get anywhere with these petty reprisals. And you know, Mahatma Gandhi said that an eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. And I fear that in the Israel and Palestine issue, they're just blinding one another. And that's why, you know, I take a certain amount of heart from the UNESCO decision, because I think one of the reasons the problem is so intractable is that the Palestinians, not having a state, have no standing legally or politically And so agreements are continually made with the Palestinians, which are then broken. You know, the Israelis promised to withdraw from at least almost all of the West Bank by a date certain in the late 1990s. Well, they not only didn't do that, but they doubled the size of Israeli settlements in the West Bank, which, you know, was contrary to the spirit of the entire Oslo Accords. The Israelis would say, well, you know, the Hamas started attacking Israelis inside Israel and there was terrorism. But that's not, that may be true, but if you have a diplomatic process going on, it's not a reason for reneging on the entire deal.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't anyway the Palestine Authority that was involved. So the Palestinians just, you know, are permanently being screwed over, basically, and they're occupied. They have no state. They have no rights. And as long as that's the case, this situation is just going to get worse and worse and worse. Israel has become an apartheid state. It's starting to attract sanctions. Even the Germans today announced that they were going to sell the Israelis a submarine, which can be fitted with nuclear missiles. And the Israelis had announced yet another settlement push into Arab East Jerusalem. And the Germans, who usually, you know, don't dare say anything about Israeli policy because of their own Holocaust past, even the Germans find this too much. And so they're threatening to not go through with the submarine sale because of the Israeli settlement policy. So when it gets to the point where the Germans are vocal on Israel issues, it's showing that the Europeans, at least, are just not going to put up with this very much longer.
Yeah. Finally, Professor, I want to ask about your situation. The news broke this summer that you were a target of the Bush administration and that they were trying to go through your trash, find out if you had a secret girlfriend or some other way to try to neutralize you. Give us the time frame on this and what you know about what they did.
Yes, well, I was contacted by the New York Times intelligence correspondent, James Risen, in February, and he told me that a group of whistleblowers inside the CIA had told him this story, that in late 2005, at the height of the Iraq War, the White House asked the CIA, and apparently at a high level, and the National Intelligence Council was involved as well, the White House asked them to dig up dirt on me and to destroy my reputation. The story was not that the White House felt that I was some kind of security threat or anything like that. There was nothing legitimate about it. It was just purely Nixonian, that could they please find out damaging information about me. One of the CIA officials, of whom this request was made by his boss, has now retired and has a consultancy, Glenn Carl. And so he was willing to confirm the story and to put his name on it, which the others are still inside the CIA, the other whistleblowers, and they're not willing to come forward.
We just did a podcast about Glenn Carl last week because he is the source for a story of an interrogation that he was instructed to conduct where they basically pushed him to torture. And he didn't think he was going to be asked to do that. And so he has gone public with the story. And I give him credit for having a conscience and following it, at least up to that point.
Yes, Glenn, from all accounts, is a man of conscience and has been engaged in a certain amount of whistleblowing. He, by the way, is being boycotted by the mainstream media because, you know, what happens in Washington is that the CIA will call up the producer and say, if you have Carl on, we'll never leak an important story to you again.
Right. And it works.
Yeah, it worked. So he's not getting, he's got very important stories to tell. He's not, you won't see him very much on mainstream media or corporate media. But with regard to my own situation, he declined the request to dig up dirt on me. He found out later that somebody else had been given the task. He tried to stop it. He thinks he did. We don't know, actually, to what extent this went forward. And the important thing here is that the CIA, by its charter and by a 1981 law, is forbidden to spy on American citizens on American soil.
I've heard that.
And it's quite illegal. And Carl admits that his immediate boss was willing to go forward with this, and then he found others in the agency who were also willing to go forward. So that's very troubling, that there were people inside the CIA who were willing to disregard the CIA charter. But the big story, seems to me, is that that somebody in the White House asked them to do this and knew that that was illegal. And was using U.S. intelligence for these petty domestic purposes. And the great worry I have is that this must have been widespread. That is to say, look, Peter, I like my blog a lot, but I'm a Midwest college professor with a blog.
Right.
So that an $80 billion intelligence agency was being trained on me, and me alone, is not plausible.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems likely that this was a modus operandi in the Bush. This was business as usual in the Bush administration, that they must have targeted a lot of people to try to destroy them politically.
Well, I'd have to suspect David Addington in the office of the vice president. That's where a lot of these initiatives surface that we know about.
Well, I just, in the absence of evidence, I don't want to name names, but certainly we know of individuals in the White House who acted in unscrupulous ways, so those would all be plausible culprits.
Mm-hmm.
The ACLU has helped me to file a Freedom of Information request on this issue with the CIA, the FBI, the National Intelligence Council. And we've asked that it be expedited. Initially, the three refused to expedite, or the FBI, I think, initially didn't bother to respond. They're supposed to respond within 10 days, according to the law. And we were going to go. We went to a federal court judge for an injunction that they expedite. The Freedom of Information Act allows you to ask that. That the agencies act with haste in the case of a prominent public figure or a journalist and so forth, and we argued that I fit that category. So when we went to the federal judge and she seemed to be favorable, all of a sudden all three of them said, okay, we'll get you the documents by January.
Mm.
So we asked them for all the documents they hold on me. The ACLU cautions me that they may try to hold back some things on national security grounds. That would, of course, from my point of view, be illegitimate because there are no national security grounds in this issue. I was not a threat to U.S. national security. And, in fact, a lot of the analysts in Washington admitted to reading my blog to get up to speed on Middle East issues and what they thought of as the war on terror. And I've even been told that I was kind of a guru to some of the analysts. Who thought my take on things was very realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So, in any case, the next news we'll really have is when the documents are released in January.
And you mentioned a female judge. Is it Anna Diggs Taylor?
I'm sorry. You know, the ACLU has been handling
this
for me, so I don't know the details.
All right.
But it was a district judge here in the Detroit area.
All right, because there is a federal judge there, Taylor, who ruled in favor of the ACLU plaintiffs in a wiretapping case. But it was over her objections, ultimately dismissed by a higher court. So she has led the charge, I think, on civil liberties issues there from the Motor City. Well, Professor, I wish you the best with that, and please keep us posted. And I'm just going to advise our listeners, if they want to see the post on Justin Bieber, it's not about the Big Bang's theory, but it's interesting, and you can find it at juancole.com. Professor, always a pleasure. Thanks for your work.
Thanks for having me on, Peter.
You can hear great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com. Coming up next, from the movie Gandhi, Gandhi tells British authorities to leave India.
Forgive me, gentlemen, but you must understand that His Majesty's government and the British people repudiate both the massacre and the philosophy that prompted it. Now, what I would like to do is to come to some compromise over the new civil...
Excuse me, Your Excellency. It is our view that matters have gone beyond legislation. We think it is time you recognized that you are masters in someone else's home. despite the best intentions of the best of you, you must, in the nature of things, humiliate us to control us. General Dyer is but an extreme example of the principle. It is time you left.
With respect, Mr. Gandhi, without British administration, this country would be reduced to chaos.
Mr. Kinnock, I beg you to accept that there is no people on earth who would not prefer their own bad government to the good government of an alien power.
Oh, my dear sir, India is British. We're hardly an alien power.
Mr. Gandhi, even if His Majesty could waive all other considerations, he has a duty to the millions of his Muslim subjects who are a minority in this realm. And experience suggests that his troops and his administration are essential in order to secure the peace.
All nations contain religious minorities. Like other countries, ours will have its problems. But they will be ours, not yours.
How do you propose to make them yours? You don't think we're just going to walk out of India?
Yes. In the end, you will walk out. Because 100,000 Englishmen simply cannot control 350 million Indians if those Indians refuse to cooperate. And that is what we intend to achieve. Peaceful, non-violent, non-cooperation. Till you yourself see the wisdom of leaving, Your Excellency.
And now for something completely different.